listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, April 9th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. As always, I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you and glad to have everybody in our live chat. We appreciate your contributions to the conversation and we always love seeing you every week. Also, a thank you to those that take the time out of their week to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, Dr. Vicki, going to be a fun discussion tonight.
It is. Before we get started, can we just say congratulations to Jackie?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, she got her master's today completed. One more step and she'll get her doctoral.
Very nice.
Congratulations. Well, good to see.
Congratulations, Jackie. So happy for you.
And another thing before we go much further, Dr. Edward was in the hospital. He's now in recovery from having a fall at home. Mm-hmm. And so we want to say, you know, shout out to you. You never have to apologize for not coming on the program, Edward. You know, life takes us in our little circles and wherever we have to go, but we're sending you a ton of energy to get well soon.
Absolutely. And well said. You know, good shout outs on both. But
this is what humanists do.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And that's why I love our little community too. You know, the love and support we get from one another.
Yep. So, you know, it occurred to me with all the goings on in the world, you know, what is humanism? And I refer to myself as a humanist. I'm in a category of being kind of socialist, and only because I think every human being, you know, deserves food, shelter, clothing, you know, just basic things like water is not a commodity for sale, but ought to be, you know, it's a necessity for life. But, you know, we have to be careful, like, what is humanism? You know, and there's different types of humanism based on, you know, kind of how you view the world. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's, you know, liberals, socialists, you know, progressive, you know, because you can be, consider yourself to be a humanist, but still be of certain ilks. If you know what I mean.
Oh, sure.
But if ever there's a time when you are not wishing well for all people, you can't be a humanist. You can call yourself that, but you're not acting it out. And I guess that's what really, you know, got me to have this conversation tonight is, are we acting by what we say we believe? And I would say this to every religion. Like, no matter what you claim yourself to be, if you're not of the mind to feed the poor, house the homeless, then you can't really say you all that and more. You know, it's a contradiction. And that's what kind of been getting me about watching societies and, you know, not just North America, but I think it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, these pockets of people claim to be humanists. But, that's kind of what spurred my desire to have this conversation tonight.
I mean, for a lot of people, you know, a lot of religious folks and people in the old dogmatic, you know, religions, humanist is almost a bad thing. It's akin, to a lot of, it's a non-believer, right? Because you place value in human qualities above God. So I think a lot of the people that might need to examine their own faith, some people do walk the walk and you can disagree with them, but admire that they do the right thing. But as a whole, sure, a lot of folks don't practice what they preach. I think humanism is this idea that is separate from a deity-based religion and philosophy. It's the idea of something based on its own merit and the quality of humanity in and of itself. And then, of course, we can boil it down to, you know, the various kind of things, and then we'll bring it around to specifically what is it to be a metaphysical humanism and all that. But
yeah. You know, a friend of mine just went for 10 days to Trinidad for a retreat in an ashram. So basically, it's kind of like a spiritual retreat. Think of that. Do a lot of yoga. They do a lot of healing work. They'll vegetarian diet, blah, blah. And her comment was, she's amazed at how competitive these people can be and the posturing. And yet they have discussions about posturing, you know. And if somebody makes a comment, the facilitator is just a little condescending. Because the facilitator is the facilitator, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where you can have all these things. You can claim to believe in a lot of things. But if you're not actually living it and you're not studying yourself and it's like that big self-examination of, am I truly what I say I am? Or is that just something that makes me look good and I can sell an ashram retreat?
You know? Talking about especially in like the online new age community,
and that's bugged me for decades, because the new age communities are very, I wouldn't say cultish insofar as very religious, like in that they're people who think they're above and beyond, you know. There's mm-hmm. this competitiveness, this I'm special.
Yeah.
It really is there. So I know Damien is saying in the chat, to me, being a humanist is rejecting authority and dogma, just focusing on basic human values like compassion. I don't think it's about rejecting authority, in my view, Damien. I think there has to be some kind of order in a society. And I believe in the consensus of that. However, you know, as you say, based on human values, but what are those basic human values? You say compassion. The Christians think they're compassionate.
Well, and some can be, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think a lot of what we're talking about is boiling out of European Enlightenment theory from the, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries and how it's morphed into what it is today, which is very wide. You talked about the New Age humanists, which would be radically different than a materialist atheist that's also considering themselves a humanist, which, you know, differs from us. We aren't strictly materialists because we believe in something beyond the veil, right? So there's all kinds of variety. And I think, you know, earlier I was thinking about, you know, is it even really anything to do with politics aside from the fact that your values will dictate how you behave in the political world? But you kind of did name everything except authoritarianism, and I can't argue with you on that. Because, yeah, I think we can all agree that authoritarianism of every stripe is bad. But, there's a lot of variety in how people will think.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Label themselves is all I was trying to get across.
Well, Dr. Mike is saying in the chat, I believe in human potential and personal responsibility. I love that.
Yeah.
But I also acknowledge and explore things that go beyond the material, like meaning, purpose, or interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where metaphysical humanism comes in mm-hmm. to the equation. And, you know, there's a difference between spirituality and metaphysics, folks. And as I've done some research, how, you know, most out there like to define spiritual as an experience. It's experiential spirituality, whereas metaphysics is more philosophical and exploring. And I like to consider myself both in a lot of ways. But metaphysical is a study of the mind. It's the study mm-hmm. of energy. It's a study of, you know, you're exploring beyond just the body and the material world. So meaning, purpose, and interconnectedness absolutely comes into play when it's about metaphysics. So you add metaphysical humanism, you know, it's keeping grounded. And of course, that's where the nine principles of life come in, Michael. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, they're really quite beautifully written. And in understanding that, but again, it's that living it.
Yeah.
You know, we can profess to be this, claim to be that, say we believe in this, but do we live it? And how are we then navigating our way through life without losing that integrity that we really desire or want to have or like to believe we have? And again, I'm going to go back to, you know, and that's where IMHS, especially through the bachelor's program, is self-reflection. You know, it's critical thinking.
Right.
Are we looking at ourselves from a place of, you know, that analysis, I suppose, is a good word, in who we are, how we're acting. So what I think, what I say, and what I do, is there a consistency or am I, you know, working through ego? We all have ego. Ego's necessary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like don't.
No.
But that's just, you know, that's incredibly rare. I'm very unique having no ego at all and being pure. But
that's because you're special.
I am.
But, I, you know, we all have all these other elements to ourselves. Without anger, for instance, you don't get creative. Hopefully mm-hmm. anger is channeled in a good way as a force of energy. And so we have all these elements of ourselves, these characteristics or qualities, you know. How do we then manage them? How do we project them? And I think that's the point of self-analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And but then also weeding out from the rest of the world what is a contradiction, you mm-hmm. know? And that's tough. It's tough for yeah. people to do. You know, watching for things like manipulation, cognitive dissonance,
yeah.
Contradictions, well, period,
and
hypocrisy, you know?
And it comes back to all things being in balance. You know, one time I was talking to a friend and I was basically saying that I worry about manipulating people without intentionally trying to, you know, think about it and stuff. And I worry that I'm, you know, I want to be honest. I want to be authentic. And I noticed that, you know, I speak differently with different people. I use different words with different, depending on the audience. And I think about how best to get somebody to kind of agree with me a lot. And, but so that friend pointed out, well, that's, everybody does that to a degree. It's just you have to make sure you're doing it without malicious intent and that you're being honest about your desire to influence something, right? Because we're all trying to influence one another with our ideas, with what we want, you know, whether we want to get Mexican or, you know, Asian cuisine, things different like that with friends. But it can be more important to governmental affairs and how we run society. Oh. But I think it's about keeping things in balance. I don't know why I went on that aside.
I want to go back to what you said. We have these different elements of ourselves that are applied in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to go, let's say you're going to apply for a loan at a bank, they don't care if you have a dog. You know, they don't care what your philosophy is or anything else. Mm-hmm. They only care about the bottom line. So you're only going to present a certain side of yourself. And I call that, you know, a sliver of a personality.
Sure.
You go to work, you dress for work. You mm-hmm. apply yourself. You're going out for dinner, you're going to behave differently and, you know, let your guard down a bit. So we have these different applications. That's not being untrue to yourself. That is navigating your way through life
yeah.
and adapting to, you know, a collective reality, so to speak. So I don't know if it's that, but if it's a matter of having dialogue with people and maybe provoking things a bit because you're curious. I've done it myself a lot. Matter of fact, I did it not too long ago because I was very curious about the way they think,
yeah.
you know, and I asked questions like, wow. And of course I put it in there. I don't agree, but, and whenever you say you don't agree and somebody gets really assertive, ooh, that's not a two-way conversation.
I think it's more aggressive, right? I always kind of think of assertive as a more, hey, this is what I believe. I'm standing up for myself, but I'm not being aggressive. Semantics.
Well, okay, I'll replace that with aggressive, and they try to challenge that. Really, there's somebody wants to win. Now, I think if you're truly a humanist, like truly a humanist, and I've had to, you know, really evolve this in myself, there is no competing. There's I don't need to defend myself. I don't need to explain that.
Yeah.
And if that's what you believe and it's not doing harm, fine. But if you for one second think that you're going to convince me of something, I know that you have an issue deeper than what you think you believe.
Yeah.
You know, there are issues, you know, like deeper that why do you think it's so important that I agree with you? Why is this necessary for you to feel special that you could convince me of what you believe when I was pretty clear quietly to say over here that's not the way I see it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're asking me personally.
I'm just saying that that's what I kind of look to others. And so it's living it to the best of our ability and questioning ourselves as we grow, as we evolve, because there's a lot of things we don't know about ourselves until we're there. Mm,
that's very true, huh?
You can do all the therapy you want. You can all the counseling you want. You can read all the books you want about improvement. But until you're in a situation where it's triggered, emotional trigger, you don't know if you've really done the work. You've intellectualized the work,
right?
And maybe you've processed through some of the emotions, but it's kind of like third party with yourself. But when you actually get in a situation where you could be triggered,
yeah,
you go, oh, I got way more work to do.
Well, do you think there should ever be a point where you can't be triggered by anything? Yeah, I think that at some point something. I mean. There has to be a red line, right? You can't just be okay with everything. There has to be something that creates a response.
I think a lot of us make exceptions to behaviors because somebody is family, somebody's a really good friend.
Yeah.
You know, when if it's a stranger, you'd never put up with that.
Well, because you don't have anything invested in it.
So I think at that point, there's a line where you only take so much and then something snaps inside. We say, oh no, this is not going to happen anymore. You know?
Well, sure.
So I think that there is a line, but again, a humanist would have compassion for other people's evolution as well.
Very true. You know, there's a line that's often used by Christians, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do. There's a lot of truth in that, to be honest, though. I mean, it's a lot of us are doing the best we can at the level of awareness that we have. You know, I've always been, or at least considered myself, a very empathetic person, and I look at sociopaths as almost inhuman, right? Because I don't understand it. How can they not feel when somebody else hurts or something like that? How can they not be conscientious, you know? But then you have to look at it this way too, that, you know, we're all a mix of components. You know, we all have free will, true, but sometimes choices are easier for some than others. And for whatever reason, they have a deficiency that doesn't allow them to connect. They don't understand why they should hurt when somebody else hurts, right? When somebody does something wrong, they don't understand why they shouldn't do it. But go on, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think we all have to give ourselves a bit of a break. When you're young, we really believe that everybody's living in a unified reality and that this is the way it is. And we encounter others, we interact with others, we have relationships based on how we see the world, assuming that somebody else sees the world the same way.
Yeah.
We assume that. And for a long time when I was young, I believed, well, doesn't everybody want to be a better human being?
Well, yeah.
And that's a rude awakening.
That's true.
And as soon as you recognize, oh, they don't think they need to be better or more or greater, and including the sociopath. And you say, well, what is a sociopath? Because I've never met one. You know, I know axe murderers exist, but I wouldn't know one.
I'm more of a psychopath, to be fair.
You know? So then you're interacting with people who have sociopathic tendencies, and whoa, something's not right here. And I still want to interact on that normal level until, you know, eventually with experience and enough people in your life, you kind of can see the flags quick. But that takes experience. That's not something that somebody can tell you about when you're 10 or 20.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know,
you can hear the words, but to actually see it and to feel it, to understand the consequences, you know, you have to understand it on some level. You have to have dealt with it. I mean, we all have had those toxic people in our lives that when you look back, you can kind of see it, but there's all kinds of folks.
Where to cut ourselves some slack too when we're growing
and
check ourselves in at the door to say, oh, that's not the kind of human I want to be.
Yeah.
And I have to dump that belief system or dump that behavior and replace it with something better that's more in line with my spirit or more in line with my philosophy or what I'm working on evolving myself to be, which Dr. Mike says in the chat, to him, metaphysics is often used to describe ideas or beliefs that go beyond imperial science, kind of where science, philosophy, and spirituality intersect. And I appreciate you putting it that way, Mike. It's kind of how the spirit, mind, body, you know, everything kind of intersects somewhere because we're thinking beings, we're spiritual beings. That's if you believe that. Some people don't think we are. We're physical beings. So there's a science in the physicality of our world.
Well, sure.
And what is that center point? How do we balance that? And I think that's the same with self-analysis and being a humanist.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I've been trying to think about, you know, what does this topic mean for me? You know, how am I coming at it? And I haven't really solidified on anything except that, you know, I think for people, when you take out a dogmatic deity, you have to look at, you know, why is something right and wrong, right? And you have to really examine empathy. Mm-hmm. And I think empathy is at the core of being a humanist, is the simplest way I can think of it.
There are some people in the world who think empathy is the downfall of the Western world.
Nice, sorry, nice. Keep it veiled. How could we possibly know what she's talking about? But, I mean, it's just one of those things. You know, I put up a post on Facebook. It's been said that human civilization didn't start with agriculture or cities. It started when human beings began to take care of our injured and sick, you know, which gave us tremendous benefits. Oftentimes, doing the right thing is good in the long term for the greatest number of people, right? Doing bad things might have short-term temporary gains, but in the long run, it's going to hurt things. It's not keeping things in balance, right? I think we can all kind of agree to that. You talked before about, you know, you grow up and you realize not everybody wants to be a better person. I think there's another layer to that, and you realize that very true, not everybody even will say that they want to be a better human being, but even those that do want to be better can't agree on what that means. And nobody's the bad guy in their mind. Everybody is justified in what they do. And I say that to help you understand people that disagree with you, and also to make you question yourselves from time to time, because everybody that's been wrong about everything was certain that they were right, you know? So.
Yeah. We're going to kind of digress for a minute over to Dr. Jerry's comment. Does the red line appear when the line is crossed, as in genetic engineering of the direwolf? The dinosaurs that are running around now are genetically engineered, or were genetically engineered, when gene manipulation, when is gene manipulation unethical or immoral? Dr. Mike has added, gene manipulation is not unethical or immoral. It depends what you're trying to do. And Jerry has asked again, help me try to understand why it isn't playing God. You know, I want to come full circle with this for a minute, if I may. We have to entertain the thought that we're all hybrids of some kind. What is it we're trying to achieve? Now, if in fact we are in some way alien hybrids, somebody was making that up.
Yeah.
Science has been genetically altering food, altering animals, genetic codes for a very long time.
And when you say very long time, just you're meaning thousands of years, not hundreds.
No, I'm
serious, but go on.
Well, I think to some degree, the AB blood type was only discovered to have come into effect about, 800-900 years ago. And when Mongolians started traveling west, you know, and anyway, one tribe with another tribe, it kind of evolved a new blood type. Is that not some, we might call that a natural engineering?
Mm-hmm.
Was it intentional? Or maybe subliminally. But they wouldn't know it would change a blood type. I mean, there's lots of ramifications that, you know, from our experimentation. But this is how medicines have evolved.
Oh, yeah.
This is how surgeries have evolved. If we're going to think that, look, I'm not defending the dire wolf. I'm not doing that. We also... Every surgical procedure that we know of has first been performed on a critter.
Yeah.
So when is it unethical or immoral? And it again, as Dr. Mike said, it all depends what you're trying to do.
Yeah, very
and,
true.
So is it right or wrong? Ooh,
case by case,
You know, it's how do we answer that? Wendy is saying scientific labs are currently cloning dogs for service needs. She also recently saw they're trying to clone the woolly mammoth through DNA found in the Antarctic and bring it back into existence. And then Donna is saying, I think Dr. Jerry is speaking more when you're bringing things back that haven't existed for like 13,000 years.
Well, if I may jump in real quick.
Yeah.
My take, and again, you know, when it comes to something that's this cutting edge, you know, I'm not going to speak for the organization, you know, or metaphysical humanism at large. I don't think that's what we're talking about with this specific issue. But a couple things I do want to just throw out for context. One, we've been manipulating animals and vegetables and, you know, plant matter for thousands of years through agriculture. You know, what we call a cow didn't exist 10,000 years ago. Intentionally modified things through husbandry and through agriculture. It was very intentional and meaning. You know, the foods that we eat today did not look like they look now 10,000 years ago. And this is a continuation of that. Now, is it right or wrong? Just like Dr. Mike says, I think it's dependent on the situation. And most importantly, I don't think we're going to know, possibly for decades or hundreds of years. Lastly, there is no dire wolf per se.
Exactly. I was going to say that.
Perfect. I mean, it's a gray wolf with traits from dire wolves that they found in DNA with different things mixed in, but it's its own thing now, right? And I think that the best thing as I've seen is that this is a step in direction of trying to learn how we can, you know, possibly reintroduce certain things into ecosystems that are missing to help balance it out from human cause. It's also a step in the direction of treating ailments. Mm-hmm. And yes, it can, like everything, be used very badly too, for the rich to create, you know, perfect little super people and everything like that too. All these discussions can be had, so.
I don't think this is far from our discussion on humanism,
yeah,
Michael.
That's true.
I don't, because I think this is something we have to look at in ourselves. It's what we question and what we're doing, why we're doing it. And are we in keeping with our conscience, if you will? And keep in mind, with From the Wolf, I mean, humans have genetically altered dogs down to, you know, teacup puppies, pocket dogs.
That's very true.
You know, and bulldogs. And, you know, we've altered all of their genetics to make something that we desire, because, you know, we like to entertain ourselves and we like something different.
Sure.
And you know, with any of these dogs, for instance, or cats or anything else, comes a whole host of medical problems that we don't necessarily anticipate. So we've been doing this, but as a humanist, what can we live with in ourselves? And are we questioning ourselves? If you're truly a humanist, can you check off all the boxes to say, I'm okay with my conscience to do this?
Yeah. And I think it's about trying to make sure you're not spreading pain and misery in the world as best you can for all considered all life, right? I think that, I don't want to name breeds, I don't want anybody to feel bad, but there are certain breeds that just shouldn't exist, because it is a mixture of suffering for the animal, right? And that's why. It's not because of anything other than the fact that an animal's going to have a life that it needn't have had without that very specific breeding, right? That little soul could have had a different mix. You know, though, so I'm just seeing the beginnings of a Dr. Mike post. Looks pretty good, too.
And go ahead. Read what Dr. Mike has just put in there. It's really good.
He wanted to throw out the latest in gene manipulation info. He points out CRISPR, which is C-R-I-S-P-R. It stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats. It's kind of what we already know about, you know, kind of splicing different eye colors and different things into, you know, new life, new babies, new things like that. What's already on the table. He goes on to say it's a gene editing tool that allows science to cut and modify DNA. Why it's a big deal: can fix genetic diseases like sickle cell anemia or cystic fibrosis, might help eliminate some inherited conditions, could help engineer crops to be more nutritious or pest resistant. Also raises ethical concerns around gene editing in embryos, as Damien pointed out, like Khan Noonien Singh from Star Trek. And yeah, I mean, that's the whole problem, isn't it?
Well, I know a couple who designered their babies and had surrogates carry them. And I can raise an eyebrow to that, because it's not something I would have even thought to do, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, who am I to judge that when they are now assured healthy babies, right down to the gender that they wanted?
And I think I think there's a level everybody can kind of agree with, right? We can prevent significant health issues from genetic maladies. I think that's something that most everybody can agree with. We want to pay for gene splicing that gives our baby specific eye colors, can make sure that they're symmetrical and physically attractive, and gives them heightened intelligence. And it's not available. You know, then it gets more murky, right? Well, then what gives you the right to, you know, shouldn't that be available for all of us? And what are the long-term consequences? Again, is something right or wrong? A lot of times it depends on...
Well, this is where my humanist would come in.
Mm-hmm.
In that if we're going to do that, it ought to be developed and available to all people, not just a select number of the population.
Right.
And I want to say this without going into politics. All right? I'm going to do my best here. It's... it's kind of how you cultivate a society where, you know, that there's a hierarchy, right? And there always is a hierarchy of some kind. But if that select a group of people has opportunity when all the others do not, the humanist in me kind of gets angry.
Yeah.
You know, because there's an imbalance in the society. So the society then is flawed. The political structure is flawed. And that's where I think this is where all of it's such a good discussion to check in with ourselves. Now, I'm going to say this, and living in the Western world, if you're white, and I am, you're white, Michael. We have a certain privilege that a lot of other people do not have. And I'm always very sensitive to this, that whatever I think I believe, does it apply to all people? You know, and that's where it helps me question what is a universal law versus a white privilege law, you know, or a reality, a view of reality law. And that's the humanist in me that's always checking in to say, if I'm going to make these, let's say, new age statements, does that apply across the board to everyone? Or is it select? And is it a myopic view of a utopia that we would like to see because we are that? We want that mirrored reflection of ourselves. And instead of being all-inclusive and kind of the humanitarian, the humanities, are we an arrogant species? Absolutely. Are we a violent species? Absolutely. How far do we take that? Because if something is offered to one, it should be offered to all. And that's where I stand as a humanist. I just don't think these particular people ought to get more, better, greater because they're white or because they have blue eyes or because, you know, we've genetically, you know, CRISPR'd people kind of thing. And that's where I think that's where our conscience has to step in and say, ooh, we're walking a fine line here.
Yeah.
You know,
actually, you know, I go the other direction. I actively discriminate against people with blue eyes because I'm jealous. Yeah.
That's fun.
But, you know, I want to touch on just a couple of things. We're getting weighed into the broadcast and we might be able to even pull a few cards here. I think talking. Yeah. But, you know, again, I just want to bring it back to empathy, right? That's the core of all of this stuff. You talk about you want to make sure that everybody has equal access because we can empathize with people that suffer. And, you know, we talk about this little bit about whiteness, which is an incredibly, in the grand scheme of human history, 200,000 years. It is a very recent thing that didn't even used to apply to all Europeans. It's such a crazy concept. But moving on, more importantly, we're talking about humanism broadly tonight, but also I just want to throw out that we do have a wonderful FAQ on metaphysical humanism on the website that you're on right now listening to this, and it has great points about what is it to be a metaphysical humanist. And again, I think you can bottle it up into the fact that we're not materialist, right? We can look into that thing that's a little bit beyond. So those are just the last points I wanted to throw out while we're still on this topic, but I don't want to take up all the time either.
Yeah, for sure. And it is that time. We're just going to kind of segue right into selecting cards. And for those who are new to the program or listening in the archives, Michael would select an Inner Oracle Self-Discovery card designed by Dr. Douglas Kelly. And I'm going to do a backup tarot card and see if there's a story to be told.
Absolutely. All right. So, hey, we have our recent graduate of her metaphysical degree. We have Jackie first up for a card. And for you, Jackie, congratulations again. I have number 44, attitude over disposition. Enthusiasm and or an agreeable disposition, along with good manners, assures individual happiness that inevitably influences others. Drawing this card may indicate a time to review a change in attitude regarding someone or something in your life. This can be positive or negative. Be proactive and ask yourself, How hard can it be? A can-do attitude makes it happen.
Well, I think this is appropriate for you, Jackie, the five of clubs, or that, you know, five of wands. It's kind of the main work is done. It's like the celebration after the work, or after the toil, after, even if it's a little, a challenge in life, you know, finally. But where do you go from here? Remember, five is the center between one and nine. Five doesn't like to feel trapped. It likes to move forward. And so that's attitude and disposition. It's where do you go from here? How do you go from here? So I think those might be some questions that you're asking yourself, but it really is just a time to celebrate. You know, like celebrate yourself. Look at how far you've come. That's awesome.
I love it.
We have Damien next.
Damien, always good to see you. You get a sequential card. In fact, I don't usually do this. I see the names and shadows are coming up, and I'm pulling cards for everybody immediately as I see their name come up, and I see interesting patterns that I haven't ever seen before, but you'll see them here in a minute. Damien, you get number 45. We so rarely have sequential cards. I have been shuffling all night, but your number 45 is inspiration and motivation. Inspiration and motivation come from hope. Motivation means finding a meaningful reason to do something. Look within for inspiration leading to motivation by reflecting on your goals in the life you want to live. Drive and accomplishment may be missing from your life, or your life may revolve too heavily around it. Remain balanced, inspired, motivated with the vigor of positive energy.
Well, I literally pulled two at the same time. They were next to each other. They came out, Damien. One is the world, and the other is the page of wands. So this is opportunity in matters of communication. Inspiration, motivation. There is an opportunity here for you in some manner. But it also requires, and what the word that's coming to me is oral. You know, some speaking or educating in some manner. So I hope that makes sense to you, but it's a really good vibe. So very positive.
Good stuff. You know, I like that. And Damien, I appreciate that comment that brings me back to my millennial heritage. But lines from a song, I'm based on 45. All right. Now, Wendy, our card keeper herself, who has been tracking the cards, we have some new cards this evening, no repeats yet, but we'll see about for you, Wendy. You get number 13, positive consciousness. It is our soul's natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with a need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill towards others. Don't hate or hold hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude, even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary.
Well, the Emperor shows up, and the first thing that comes to mind is navigate around authority, navigate around the power. Certain things that you think might be in your way, remain positive, and, you know, find the loophole around. I don't know why I say that. You know, the Emperor, again, in this case, could maybe isn't just someone, it could be something. So matters of business, perhaps, or rules, regulations. And there's always a way around things. You just have to find it. So stay steadfast is what I want to say to you. Be creative.
Find those loopholes.
Donna is next.
Donna, we're coming back into the 40s with number 41, communication. The most important form of communication is with the higher self, reflecting on one's spiritual evolution. A good communicator both listens and speaks equally, interactively, and with interest. A poor communicator either talks too much or listens too much. A lack of communication will kill any relationship, and communication is the most effective method for ending an unhealthy relationship. Assertive communication is direct, honest, empathetic, and focuses on win-win. Communication, along with trust, are the two most important relationship traits.
Well, Donna, I got the three of swords, three of spades. And I went, ooh, what is that? And so I said, I got to have another one. So in this case, the Ten of Wands, the Ten of Clubs. When that's partnered with communication, there might be someone you may disagree with, who's a disappointment to you, or you're feeling disappointment. And finding an understanding between the two of you. That Ten of Clubs says perseverance, and you'll see the goal. It's like the challenge, but the goal is in sight. It's finding that middle ground in some way with someone or around an issue of some kind. And, you know, sometimes I can feel a little bit anxious or stressful. But I want to say here, listening is the key, and listen between the words. You know, it's very hard for a lot of people to say what they mean and mean what they say. and that's something I just want to say to you, though everybody's learning. So I hope that makes sense, Donna. Mm-hmm. We have Dr. Jeff next.
Dr. Jeff, for you, I have number 6, boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it's necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is the mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me? That's a good one.
Ooh, it is a good one. But I got the King of Hearts there, King of Cups. Oh, boundaries and the King of Cups, Jeff. Well, first of all, the King of Cups has everything to do with the heart, living your own truth. You know, just being true to yourself and moving forward in life, again, with kind of what we've been talking about tonight, you know, integrity, honor, truthfulness, and what are your boundaries? And maybe this is the boundaries about the outside world. What you will and will not let into your life from extraneous forces or other forces. I know, and look, I don't know if this applies, but what comes to mind is, you know, when you start the, you know, a lot of your social media, like the Blind Outdoorsman, which you're doing, another plug for Jeff, by the way, Blind Outdoorsman, you're going to get some negatives, or you're going to get people who don't agree with it, you know, and you have to just shrug that off. Those are your boundaries. Just shrug it off. Or you might think things are a little bit too hard for a minute. You know, take a day off, shrug it off, and keep going. So it's just knowing your boundaries. And that has to do with your energy level as well.
Mm. Well, good point.
Good one. Jerry is next.
Jerry, always good to see you, and thanks for your contributions. For you, going back to the 40s, we get number 42, trust, integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, are the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Oh, I got the Justice card. So that's another major arcana here tonight. Trust and integrity, justice. The first question that comes to mind is, what was the agreement? It's like going back to the original conversation or the original agreement and sticking to the agreement. And that might be on your part, but it might also be on someone else's part. And reminding not to get sidetracked from the original agreement. I hope that makes sense to you there, Jerry. But keeping in mind that trust and integrity, you can't go wrong. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. Kevin. We have Kevin next.
All right. I think that's our last card. So if I missed anybody, let me know. Also, you know, no repeats tonight. You know, 2025 is a year of change. No repeats on cards. So maybe we'll see how it goes with Dr. Kevin. For you, I have number 11, awareness. Let's see. Number 11, awareness. Should have had the book open already. I knew what card it was. Awareness. Every human being has a responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can according to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude.
Oh, I like this. We've got another major arcana. It's lovers. No, don't take that literal. awareness with passion, energy. It's like, let's say awareness giving you more passion. The more we learn about ourselves, the more we learn, again, as a metaphysical humanist, Michael, you know, light bulbs start to come on. Or, so, you know, I could hear in my mind something that somebody told me when I was 20, and I never thought about it again until it pops in my head, and I go, oh, I get it. And I feel that that's happening here, kind of, Kevin. It's like you're in life, living life, and suddenly things are, oh, that makes sense. And it feeds your energy. It's fuel. And so it's rather exciting that your energy is ignited again. And through this, you know, constant learning and growing and becoming more aware. But not just of yourself, but of other people. So insightfulness, really. Again, yep. I hope that makes sense.
Good message. I like it.
You know. And thanks for the feedback, and especially Jerry there. She understands that perfectly. All right. There's kind of, I guess what I really want to be, you know, clear to say to everybody is we all have to check in with ourselves. We all, and it's every day. It's not like, oh, you reached the state of enlightenment. Ooh, you know, I know everything. There's always little layers to ourselves, and you say, oh, I didn't know I felt that way, or I didn't know I thought that, or, you know, there's always things, but you check in with yourself. And if we are a humanist, as we like to claim we are, mm-hmm. then that's a good framework to resort to, like the nine principles of life. You know, it's, I just like the nine principles of life. That's all.
Good stuff.
They're good. So just checking in with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, we're definitely going through a transition period here and, but we have our principles that are going to guide us, right? We know why we are who we are, right? And we come together, not in a community defined by a dogmatic God, but by our shared respect for our humanist values, our metaphysical humanist values, because we all look to that little something extra, that something beyond the veil. And, you know, it's been a great discussion. You know, I'm glad that you brought this up. I'm glad you had this idea because it was worth talking about.
Well, I think it's timely.
Yeah, yeah, you absolutely.
Know, it's timely when we're living in a rather confusing and chaotic world. Probably like everyone else here. I mean, every day I shake my head and say, what?
Yeah.
You know, my eyes get the best exercise. I had a question myself today. I didn't know if I was an optimistic cynic or a cynical optimist.
Wow.
And I had to really ponder that because there's a downside to humanity that, whoa, and yet I can't help but hope.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it's just in us to believe that more, greater, better will prevail.
Right.
And that everybody kind of wants the same thing. They just don't all agree on how to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, there are some greedy, nasty people in the world.
Oh, sure.
People who don't care. How do you rise above that? And it's just, it's through that hope and perseverance and checking in with, no, you, I'm not letting you push me around. You know, you can't have my spirit. You can't have my mind.
What you meant by I don't want to push you around.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just... You know, it's you. You can't have that. So, I want to remind people out there, don't let them push you around.
Yeah.
You are who you are, and you know who you are. Then don't behave in a way that sets you off your track.
Right. Right.
You know.
And, you know, here's the other part of that, too, is, you know, some people are going to be outside the norm, but most folk aren't going to want to push you around. They're not, and frankly, for better or worse, they're not going to care. You know, when you're walking around at the grocery store, you're going through society, most folks are focused on themselves, at least for
That's
now.
That's true.
You know, and one good thing, I'm sorry.
I got to tell you, I was at the grocery store yesterday. I was at the checkout, and there's a couple behind me. They moved right up. They were 2 feet from me, and I'm thinking, man, COVID taught these people nothing. I almost said, do you want to watch? Because I was using the debit machine. It was on the tip of my tongue, Michael. I had to check in with myself to not, you know, have bad behavior. But I wanted to look at them and say, oh, you want to watch? Because they were that close.
Yeah.
But again, it was a moment, because... I have a tendency to say things like this. Sometimes there's no filter. And I get better, and I have good days and bad days.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, you know, you got the lesson to learn here, too. And unless you speak up, it's not going to change. And I just took a breath and said, no, I'm good. It's all good. I got my stuff and I left.
Most folks aren't out to get you. You know, most folks just don't think about it. You know, they don't think. And again, you know, not that it's a, I don't mean it as a Christian parable, but I will say, forgive them for they know not what they do, right? People don't know why they should be better conscientious, right? Because we want to live in a world, we want to be treated like we treat others, and vice versa, I should say. But yeah, it is very apt to have that discussion, and I'm glad that you didn't physically assault the people at the grocery checkout line. But you know, I think I've reset the outgoing music like 3 times now. But so
okay.
it is that time. If we go any further, we got to double Dr. Vicky's fee here. So, but no, it has been a great discussion. I love seeing you guys. I appreciate all that you guys bring to the table. I appreciate the discussion, the feedback. And, yeah, just love seeing you every week. So, Dr. Vicky, it's that time. Last thoughts?
Oh, it's just what I said. Yeah. Don't let them push you around out there.
Gosh
Stay
darn it.
To you.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. So, thank you, everyone. Can't wait to see you all again next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.